Hey guys, welcome to the Cloud Computing Weekly Podcast, your one-stop for news, information, and expert advice around the emerging world of cloud computing. This podcast is brought to you by Cloud Technology Partners in partnership with our host, TechTarget. My name is Dave Linthicum, Cloud Computing SME, author, speaker, B-List Geek, and with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. And joining me today is our special guest, Brad Young, technology marketing specialist, environmental scientist, and weekend woodworker, who is also with the firm Cloud Technology Partners. So catch us up, Brad. What you been working on lately?
Hey, Dave. Great to be on the podcast again. Always a pleasure when you select internal folks here. So as I said, I do most of the marketing for Cloud Technology Partners. And one of our recent projects is actually working on a responsive website for our cloudtp.com main site. So I have my sleeves rolled up and working on the back end of our WordPress site to make it more responsive. So been doing that a couple of the past weeks. And hopefully we'll actually roll that out in the next week or so. So look out for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So I got some compliments on your site today from the radio show that I did. They said that was very nice. Good work on that. So woodworking, you and Chris Greendale, same hobbies.
Yeah, funny. We both play tennis. He jokes around and says the only reason he hired me was because I am a good tennis player and I could hit around with him on the weekend. But yeah, it turns out he's really into woodworking, has a bit of a shop out as his house, and living in Boston, it's hard to have all your tools in the apartment, but I've been going to an art school right outside the city where on the weekends I can fool around and make some tables, make some boxes, and have a good time.
Yeah, they used to have those when I was a military brat when I was younger. They had, with youth activities, these shops you could go to, and they had piles of scrap wood. And you could make, you know, whatever you could find, you can make anything out of. But I learned how to use, you know, dado saws. I learned how to use table saws, learned how to use miter boxes, miter saws, and, you know, build the birdhouses and the toolboxes and all the easy stuff. Even skills I use today in trying to repair things around the house. So it's funny how that stuff just kind of carries over. And it's popular. A lot of people do woodworking today. I think it's a great hobby. And plus, you know, with furniture as expensive as it is, if you learn how to build it, all the better, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the big benefits that really Chris and I see is in the technology space, it's hard to actually put something tangible to the work that we're doing. So when you can go on in the back end and actually build something that you can play around with your hands and feel the sand, or if feel the sandpaper as you're finishing a piece, that tangible aspect is pretty rewarding.
Or in Chris's case, fill the sandpaper machine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, machines make it easier, that's for sure.
Yeah, machines sure do make it easier. Anyway, events coming up. You can talk Google Cloud Platform Live, New York City, Tuesday, the 25th. That's of this month, right there, Brad?
Yeah, that's next week. Yeah.
Got it. Boston AWS Meetup, April 7th. Google away for that. Landmark CIO Summit, April 9th. Red Hat Summits, I'm speaking at that. San Francisco, April 14th. Looking forward to that. And the Chef Conference, also in San Francisco, April 15th. I'll have to stop by and say hello to the good people who are working with Chef. Webinars coming up. We have The Value of DevOps in the Enterprise, airing next Thursday. You go to cloudtp.com for that, correct, Brad?
Yep, the webinar page.
Got it. And how to migrate 50 apps to AWS in 50 days. I got to check that one out. Coming up on April 2nd. Who's doing that one?
That's Ben Grubin and Matt Uchinchin from AWS.
Awesome. That's great. So let's kind of get into the news. So you got a story here, and we're going to kind of focus on the clean tech aspect of cloud computing. Stanford engineers create a software tool to reduce the cost of cloud computing. Just as Netflix uses an algorithm to recommend movies we ought to see, a Stanford software system offers by-the-moment advice to thousands of server farm computers on how to efficiently share the workload. And this according to a news and Stanford, I guess their Stanford paper. So catch us up on this one. This one's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I thought this was pretty interesting. We included it in our weekly report a couple weeks ago. And basically, the gist of it is they came up with this cool software tool that helps make data centers a lot more efficient, not only in terms of performance, but also in terms of their electricity usage. So the article talks that about most of the servers in a typical data center are only using about 20% of their capacity. So on any given day, different factors such as the time, the number of users, or even unexpected demand is it provides some challenges in terms of managing this usage and is definitely less than optimal in terms of efficiency. So what they did is they're like trying to figure out how you can almost double the amount of work with the same server footprint by implementing innovative software tools that can manage the workloads. So instead of asking developers to estimate how much capacity they likely need, which is more of a reservation system, they automated the process and were switching from reservation-based cluster management to performance-based allocation. And they left it up to the analytics and the software tool to determine what servers should run which applications, and looked into a term called server multitasking, where some servers can handle a variety of different applications to increase the efficiency, where I suppose, for example, if you're focusing on one really resource-intensive app, that should be allocated to a server on its own and be more dedicated. But for the ones that require less power and less compute resources, you can actually multitask those on servers. So I don't know what your take is on this, but I thought it was a pretty cool new software tool.
Yeah, it is a cool software tool, and there's some of the publicly available tools out there, such as PowerAssure, which do similar things. I'm not sure what algorithms they use, but they will use workloads amongst data centers based on power allocation. Also, even the cost of power, which is more important. So you end up saving power because you're, in essence, moving workloads around to optimize the use of these things. In essence, power becomes kind of another resource. In fact, they call it... software-defined power, SDP. And it is pretty cool, because no matter where you sit on the green argument, if you sit in the I don't want to spend a lot of money argument, this kind of makes sense. And the biggest cost of data centers is power. In fact, they put them in certain places just kind of based on the availability of power and the cost of power. And if we're able to manage that much more effectively and smarter, in essence, put automation processes around it, which they're doing with these algorithms, that goes right to the bottom line. And it kind of strikes me as, why didn't we think about this 20 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. They actually have a quote here from one of the head folks who runs Microsoft server and data center business. And he says, if you can double the amount of work you can do with the same server footprint, it would give you the ability to grow your business much faster and obviously save a lot on costs. So we should be thinking about this from the get-go.
Yeah, we should. I think people who run data centers just kind of assume that power is almost free, because it used to be. Our electric bills were $30 a month. Now they're, $600 a month. For the same household, and in data centers, it's all they do is eat power. So this is a step in the right direction, getting people thinking innovatively about using and managing power better. Because we used to kind of put that into kind of the hands of the electricians and the people who design data centers. I think it's really kind of an automation thing that really should be in the hands of the people who are designing software. Go take a look at PowerAssure. Go take a look at this article. It's in News Stanford EDU. I think in February, it's entitled Stanford Engineers Create a Software Tool to Reduce the Cost of Cloud Computing. So let's get into this Facebook thing. Facebook open source data center efficiency code. And so Facebook has open sourced the code it uses to measure the energy and water consumption of its data center, as well as the code for the dashboard that visualizes those readings in real time. Facebook first publicly shared the dashboard in April 2014 in its Pinesville, Oregon. I believe that's where its data center is. And Forest City, North Carolina data centers have become available online since. Facebook says cloud provider Rackspace helped get the code ready for open source and is considering implementing it for data centers. So this is a very cool story here. So this is according to GigaOm. So give me the details behind this.
Yeah, so I actually picked this up because I follow Facebook's data center activities relatively closely. Back when I was at Duke, I did my senior thesis on the environmental impacts of data centers in rural North Carolina. And the Forest City data center that Facebook mentions in this article, I got to go visit it and tour it with their head of operations there. And at the time, you walk into the lobby and they have two huge flat screen TVs laid out on a giant glass wall. And what you see is the real time, both power and water analytics for the entire data center. So it's an enormous building that takes up multiple acres, entire city blocks of worth of servers. And you see these numbers in real time of the statistics on both compute resources and the other power and water. So open sourcing this, I think, is definitely a step forward. And in terms of letting the layperson understand the massive amounts of power and water that these facilities require. And it's not only Greenpeace and other environmental organizations who are sort of putting the spotlight on these massive data centers because of their environmental impacts, because Facebook's one in Oregon is powered mostly by hydroelectric power, which is great. But their facility in North Carolina is based mostly on coal and nuclear power supplied by Duke Energy. So Greenpeace gave them pretty low marks in terms of their environmental sustainability on that facility. But I think the more of these open standards that we have, and to give Facebook credit, compared to Apple and Google, they're much more forthcoming with not only their data center designs. So they use some pretty innovative evaporative cooling techniques in both the Forest City and Oregon facility. And those are open source designs. So if you're a large corporation and building a new data center, for example, FedEx in Colorado Springs, which is where I'm from, they built one of theirs there, and they used the open source evaporative cooling designs that Facebook had come up with. And as we build more of these and more people are turning to the cloud and the demand for computing increases, the more transparent and forthcoming we can be on the best practices for data center design and management, definitely the better. So I'm glad that they're getting some publicity around this. And it was neat to see it in firsthand a couple of years ago, right in the lobby, this open source code in action.
Yeah, and as we start figuring this out, I mean, is even to the previous article, you know, this benefits everybody, and be forthright in terms of how we're able to take this code and apply it and take these design patterns and best practices and things like that and make them work, to save some power. And, based on the value within the open source model within the cloud community. So we have, CloudStack and OpenStack and, hundreds of other open source projects that are out there that have been monitoring over the years. And this is, in essence, the same thing. So we're going to go ahead and put something out there as an arena of thought and contribute to it and have some smart people add to it. And by doing that, everybody kind of benefits from kind of a group, project or the ability or, crowdsourcing in terms of how this stuff is able to work. And a little bit, people solve little problems, and ultimately it goes to solving a big problem. So it's a step in the right direction. So what does the NSA want to keep? Why does the NSA want to keep its water usage a secret? National Security Agency, the NSA, has many secrets, but here's a new one. The agency is refusing to say how much water it's pumping into the brand new data center. It operates in Buffdale, and that's in Utah. And I think I saw kind of a tinfoil hat kind of a program on Discovery Channel about that thing. According to the NSA, its water usage is a matter of national security, and this according to Wired. So why do they want to keep their water usage secret? What has it got to do with anything?
Well, I think they don't want to have the local residents of Utah know that while they're having water restrictions on their lawn, the data center down the street is sucking in, I think the article quoted, 1.7 million gallons of water per day. I think the social and geographical context of this story is important. As I mentioned, I'm from Colorado, and in the West, there's a saying, you don't touch my gun, you don't touch my whiskey, and you don't touch my water. That was actually from one of our senators. And that really drives the heart of this story. Not having such a prolific user of water disclose the actual amount that they're consuming not only heightens people's angst against the NSA, since they haven't been forthcoming about basically any of their usage statistics for these massive buildings, but it's aggravating to know that your neighbor, your federal neighbor down the street, is grossly using way too much water, and where's the market demand for efficiency when they don't have to report any of this? So it's almost the opposite of what Facebook is doing, where they're broadcasting their usage statistics to the world with this new open source code that provides an easy way to visualize it. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have the NSA, who's keeping all of this data secret under the pretext that it could dampen our national security defense. So I understand that someone theoretically could look at the water usage and try to back engineer, okay, well, that probably means they have this many servers and are processing this much data. But I mean, the truth is they're processing a ton. So I don't understand why they can't actually release the information. And it turns out, follow up on this story, they are under a new court order. They're going to have to release at least some preliminary statistics. So it's a step in the right direction, but definitely caught my eye when I read across it.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking at a picture of the building right now. So why can't I guesstimate the amount of square foot that they're using for processing and, you know, based on the average server size and things like that, figure out the concentration of servers and therefore the electricity usage as well, the water usage. I mean, I know people who kind of do that for a living and it seems to be, you know, kind of a nice science. I understand you're not going to get schematics of the building, but looking at it now, I can tell where the data is stored versus where people are working, you know, just kind of the way the whole thing's constructed. So, I mean, this kind of stuff gets us in trouble because it ends up being, you know, putting a line in the sand where a line in the sand doesn't necessarily need to be. I understand about national security and I wouldn't let people wander through the building. But in terms of amount of energy consumption and water consumption, things like that, I don't think there's a lot people can tell from that. So, I mean, they have another, you know, they have another idea. And of course, they're sending letters and that kind of stuff. But it's just wasting time and energy and building this stuff. And in fact, I would argue that, you know, this is kind of a weird place to place a data center. I mean, normally data centers need a lot of water. They need a lot of power. And most of the power that they need is for cooling purposes. Mm-hmm. They're building this thing in the middle of a desert. What's the deal with that?
Well, yeah. I did look into sort of the top key reasons why someone would locate a data center where it is. And as you mentioned, easy access to large quantities of power, and I'll bet cheap power is really important, but also inexpensive land. So my guess is this was probably on federal land. They got a really good deal. And also mitigating the risk of any type of environmental disaster. So that's why you don't necessarily see a whole lot of data centers right on the coast of Florida and hurricane territory or right along the San Andreas Fault. So Utah desert's not too bad for that. And the only other reason why sort of a desert arid climate could be helpful in terms of a data center location is on the cooling front. So if the center is using evaporative cooling, we'll probably never know because they're not going to release that information. But if it were, the arid air would help in terms of the efficiency of the evaporative cooling system. Same thing for FedEx's main data center in Colorado Springs. It's high elevation, arid, dry air equates to more efficient evaporative cooling.
Got it. So there's some gains in the area where they are. They can lower humidity leads to more efficient evaporative cooling, therefore lower cost of cooling.
Yep, except we're in a huge drought in the West, and the evaporative cooling approach uses a lot of water, so definitely a major drawback to that approach.
I was like a guy who pitched me to build a data center in North Dakota, and actually it was, well, if you need to cool your data center, just open a window.
Yep, well, I mean, Google's getting these large companies who have a lot of money to invest in data center design are coming up with some pretty innovative ideas. So Google has one in Scandinavia that's cooled by seawater. And there were talks that barge in San Francisco was actually going to become a data center. Obviously, it's now a Google showroom. But those sort of unique approaches, I think we're going to start seeing more and more of those. And coming from really the big three, well, I guess we can throw in Amazon in there too, the big four. So Apple, Facebook, Google, and Amazon, and I suppose Microsoft as well. But the companies that have a lot of money to invest in data center technologies and the R&D to actually make them happen. So whether it's data centers cooled by seawater or the world's largest privately owned solar farm, which is currently outside Apple's data center in Maiden, North Carolina, I think we're going to continue seeing that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think that we just got to get better at where to place these things. Now, you got to keep in mind, kind of looking at the bigger picture, people always look at the construction of these data centers specifically driven by cloud, in this case, Facebook, in this case, NSA monitoring cloud, as, you know, really kind of a step back in the fact that we're conserving more resources. But if you look at the larger picture, we should be able to consolidate some processing and actually stop the building of lots of different data centers as we kind of move to shared resources and shared processing. So at least that's the understanding, or that's the concept. I'm not sure how good we're doing and executing toward it. But, you know, cloud computing has a tendency to kind of get a kick in the teeth from the environmental agencies, things like that. Reality is that in 10 years, it's going to have a much, much, much larger impact on the environment in a positive way, just because of the consolidation and the ability to kind of, quit building data centers. Every time someone needs to, you know, line up another petabyte of storage, we got to get another, 5,000, 6,000 feet of data center space, and that's got to stop. So final thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And the moral of the story is these large companies are going to be a lot more efficient than you are. So economies of scale definitely plays into it. And yeah, like the Stanford piece, I think we're also going to see not necessarily more construction related solutions to this, but innovative software and efficiency patches, and then full out solutions that will let us maximize our current and near term data center and computing capacity to get the most out of it for the minimal both electricity and water and other environmental impacts. So I think we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think if you do that, as well as focus on making the data centers more effective and efficient, as well as managing power better, as well as continuing to manufacture more efficient chips and hardware to run in these data centers, I think we're going to start moving hopefully in a positive direction. Because I would hate to see just kind of a world of data centers. I live near Ashburn, Virginia. If you've ever been to Ashburn, Virginia, it's farm data center, farm data center, farm data center. It's almost weird, almost science fiction-ish. You have all these data centers are being built amongst the farmland, because that's where a huge group of fiber comes out of the ground, and the power is relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know when it's going to stop. So pretty soon the farms aren't going to be there anymore. It's just going to be data centers. But it looks like a rural area where someone just peppered with hundreds of data centers out there. It's the weirdest thing in the world. Go out to Ashburn, Virginia, drive down the Greenway, and look left and right. It is becoming a very odd world, very different in the last few years out there. So anyway, please pick up a copy of my book, Cloud Computing and SOA Convergence, which you can find on SoftBank on Amazon as well as on the Kindle. And check out my blog on InfoWorld as well as GigaOhm Pro. Please don't forget to go to www.cloudpp.com for current cloud news, links to this podcast, and more ways to contact us directly. Subscribe to our weekly cloud report, the Doppler Report, for roundup of my articles as well as other cloud computing news. Best practices delivered in your inbox every Saturday. I'm a fan. You become a fan too. And follow me on Twitter at David Linthicum, LinthicuM. You got a Twitter, Brad?
Yeah, so at CloudTP. I'm the machine behind that. So follow us and you'll get my tweets as well.
There you go. Also, please make sure to support our host, Tech Target. Make sure to read my content there, as well as some great research, reporting, and events. Please go to searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. Just type in searchcloudcomputing.techtarget.com. So until next time, best of luck in building your cloud computing solutions. We'll be back next week. You guys take good care. Bye-bye.